You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
Good morning from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg, and welcome to the MoneyWeb Now podcast. If you find yourself confused, either by the increase in pitch of the voice of your host or by the decrease in the value of your investment portfolio, fear not, you are in the right place. I'm Narina Fisser of ETFSA, one of the stand-in hosts for Simon Brown, who chose a great time to unplug at the beach and leave us to fend for ourselves and try to make sense of all things markets and investments. Simon, if you are listening, switch off from the airwaves and head down to where you can catch more exhilarating waves. I believe surf's up. Unfortunately, not the same can be said for markets, where there seems to be a lot more down than up this morning. Henry Biddlecombe and his guests set the scene for us yesterday, warning of a volatile week that calls for nerves of steel, a commodity which is now fortunately much more affordable than just a few short weeks ago. History tells us that September shivers should not surprise us, yet the reality of the daily ups and downs, currently more of the latter than the former, may leave a bitter taste in your mouth after your morning coffee, even with a healthy dose of sugar. But let's take a quick look at the indicators this morning. The US markets overnight were down, the Dow by 1.8%, S&P by 1.7%, NASDAQ worst off 2.2% down. This morning in Japan, after a day off yesterday, the TOPIX is down 2%. In China, the Hang Seng down 0.6%. These point to another challenging day for the local market, which closed down 2.2% yesterday, reflecting much of the same across Europe and the UK, with the German DAX down 2.3%, in France the CAC 40 down 1.7%, and the UK down just under 1%. The rand this morning, pretty much where we closed yesterday, against the dollar at 14.78, against the pound at 20.20, and against the euro at 17.34. New generation hedges, cryptocurrencies, proved did not much relief in the short term, with Bitcoin down 2.4% below $42,500 this morning, and Ethereum down around 1%, dipping below the $3,000 mark. The more traditional risk hedge, gold, did actually increase, $1,763 this morning, up 0.34%, and Brent oil also resuming its upward trend, $74.57 this morning, up just over 1%. Against this backdrop, let's check in with our guests to help us navigate the choppy waters.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money.
My first guest this morning is no stranger to the MoneyWeb community and always a breath of fresh air. Ladies first, good morning, Mia, and thank you for joining me this morning for a synopsis of what happened in the market yesterday and overnight. The 2.2% decline in the JSE yesterday has now pushed us into correction territory, meaning we're down more than 10% since the all-time high in the second week of August, when we came tantalizingly close to the magical 70,000 level on the all-share index. A market wobble in September is nothing unusual, but it does seem to trip us up every time it happens. So help us get some perspective. What is driving the current situation? Is there more to come? And what are you doing at the moment?
Good morning, Narina. It's lovely to be with you on the show. So we've seen the markets yesterday, and it really actually started at the end of last week, if we talk about the current news effect of the Evergreen, or the Evergrande, rather. I'm confusing the two names. Anyway, the Evergrande situation that we are seeing in China, with one of the largest building companies in the world now standing on the brink, a real estate company standing on the brink of bankruptcy. And that has really spooked the market. It came to the market's attention due to the fact that there's a big payout this week of bonds that they'll have to settle. And there is a big concern that they won't have the money to pay that. And we have seen the commodity prices, especially around a building, coming down quite a bit over the last month or so. But especially over the last week, where we've seen the iron ore price now dip just below $100 last night, and that really influenced the whole market. So we saw Kumba and Anglo, two of the companies, the heavyweights on South African market that has done particularly well this year, come back quite substantially yesterday as well, just below 5%. And we just saw that contagion taking the market as a whole.
So I guess it's not surprising yesterday that the big drops yesterday did start in the mining and resources sector, as you mentioned, Anglo and Kumba. But we did also see Discovery and Old Mutual take some pain amongst the financials. And then the telecommunications company, Vodacom, MTN being the biggest negatives in the industrial grouping. It really seemed yesterday as though there was no place to hide, maybe with the exception of some of the gold shares. What did you make in general of the trading day on the JSE?
Yes, I think you summed it up very neatly there. There was really nowhere to hide. We did see, however, something that you and I can chat about in a while after the broad feeling, but there was some company news that also came out and did have a positive effect. But besides that, you know, it was really no place to hide. I think markets in September has always been a tough month to navigate. With markets wobbling, we generally see negative months on the markets in September month, if you go back in history. And this is no exception. I think, you know, the fact that there can always be some news attributable to the fact that there's worry in the market. But the contagion of this, I'm not quite sure that it'll be as large as some of the commentators fear due to what we've seen coming from Beijing and how government actually does take control of situations like this, especially in a situation with Evergrande, where they are in control of most of the major banks that have the biggest exposure to Evergrande.
Yeah, I've seen some commentators saying this is not going to be the Lehman Brothers moment for China, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. Both Japan and China was closed yesterday, so they're in a bit of a catch-up mode this morning. But it seems as though there are no bulls left in this China shop. So, yeah, Evergrande, not to be confused with Evergiven or Evergreen, the ship that blocked the Suez Canal. What is just your take on the investment outlook for China, coming hot on the heels of the regulatory crackdown in the technology stocks? Obviously, we've now seen this problem in the real estate and bond market and so on. Where do you see China at this stage?
Yes, Irina, I think that this is going to go down as a sort of a shorter term contagion, maybe in the markets that influences the volatility. But over the long term, I think there is still a lot of investment case and value in China, being one of the largest economies in the world, having such a strong growing middle class, and the regulations not all really bad if we look back over the last couple of months, and not all to have been sort of surprising, because there's been quite a long lead up to a lot of these regulations being implemented. So I still think that there is a lot of opportunity to invest in China. I think that you need to do it the right way. Probably through Hong Kong is an easier way, and probably a slightly less worrisome way if you want to avoid the VIE structures. But yes, I think that the businesses in China still has the opportunity to offer you exceptional long-term growth.
Mia, yes, we're running out of time. I know that you mentioned briefly the transaction that was announced yesterday by Rand Merchant Investment Holdings, announcing the unbundling of its 25% stake in Discovery and its 27% stake in Momentum Metropolitan. There was a lovely interview by Raik van Niekerk last night on MoneyWeb News, so I encourage listeners to go and catch up on that one. But unfortunately, that's all we have time for this morning. Thank you for your time, Mia, and for sharing your analysis and your insights with us on the MoneyWeb Now podcast.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money.
For the past decade, at least, South African investors have come to learn that the most likely direction of the JSE would largely depend on the move in Naspers, and more specifically, the move in its Chinese investment, Tencent. But a significant corporate action, in which there was an exchange of Naspers shares for shares in its sibling Prosus, has fundamentally changed the landscape of the JSE and its major benchmark indices, and investors will have to start looking more broadly to analyse the expected moves in the market. The latest quarterly review of the FTSE JSE Africa Index Series was effective yesterday, and to help us understand how things have changed and why, Mark Randall of the JSE joins us this morning for some insight. Thank you for your time, Mark, especially so early in the morning. Take us back a bit. What proportion of the JSE did Naspers represent at its peak prior to the introduction of Prosus and the subsequent corporate action?
Good morning, Marina. Thank you. And it's great to be on the show. It's a really interesting question because Naspers has been a feature of the JSE for so long now that it is actually useful just to zoom out a little bit and remind ourselves of the trajectory that the stock has taken. So 15 years ago, Naspers was, I guess you could almost call it a lightweight compared to today, at between sort of 1 and 1.5% of the broader all-share index. But from 2013, I guess, is when we really started seeing this accelerated growth coming through compared to the rest of the JSE, carrying on all the way through to November 2017, when the index rate peaked at around about 22% of the all share. And it was at similar levels 2 years ago, when 2 years later, rather, when Prosus listed.
Sure, yeah, that is a heavyweight.
And I must say that we see a very similar story when we look at the trading patterns and not just market cap. So, I mean, again, coming from a low base, but in 2019, we saw that 18 Rand out of every 100 Rand trading in the JSE equity market was traded in Naspers stock. So it made the company a real key driver of our liquidity profile.
Yeah. And what was the impact of this share swap transaction on the makeup of the market and this dominance of Naspers?
This was such a massive corporate action that we saw last month in the local market. I mean, effectively, Prosus listed 450 million new shares and offered these shares directly to the existing Naspers shareholder base in exchange for their Naspers shares. So kind of if I put that differently, if I was a Naspers shareholder, I could swap out just less than half of my Naspers holdings and receive new Prosus shares in exchange. Massive impact when it was implemented, 16th and 17th August, we saw huge trading volumes on the exchange. But now that the dust has settled to some extent, the reality has played out almost exactly as we would have expected. So with about half of these Naspers shares purchased up by Prosus and taken out of the market, the weight of Naspers in the all-share index has come down massively, around about 7% give or take last night. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the weight of Prosus in the all-share index has shot up from 1% to nearly 5%. Although, of course, we would expect to see some of this decrease over the next quarter or two as some of these shares move to Amsterdam. Yeah. What that means in respect to the dominance of Naspers on exchanges is really difficult to tell. So, obviously, market cap and index rates are down significantly, but the future is really going to be driven by the Naspers valuation, the discount, the Prosus growth story, and I guess, broadly speaking, the interest of global investors in emerging markets in South Africa.
Yeah. So I know that there's been a lot of focus on the capped indices in particular, and I guess it's this dominance of Naspers that was one of the reasons why the capped indices were introduced. Single stock exposure was limited to 10% at the start of each quarter, but you now mentioned 7% for Naspers, 5% or so for Prosus. So how have these indices been affected by the share swap? Because we now find ourselves at the start of a new quarter where the 10% capping is a bit of a moot point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a fair point. So we introduced this 10% capping really just to help managers and investors manage their concentration risk. Nobody thinks it's a good idea to have sort of 20% of joint pensioners' money in a single company. But we've really sort of come back full circle now after this corporate action, because the Naspers weight is down to 6 or 7%, the Prosus weight is down as well, significantly less than 10%. What we've seen is that if we had left our capping rules at the 10% level, investors would actually have had to go back into the market to buy those very Naspers shares that they had just swapped away, which felt deeply unintuitive to us and to our investors. So what we've really done as an interim solution, and this is probably 3 to 6 months, is we've reduced the capping level just in our Cap 6 indices from 10% down to 6%. And the intention really is just to align the index rates with what has actually happened to investor portfolios, without triggering the sort of massive unnecessary trading in the market.
Yeah, sounds very prudent. It doesn't sound as though this process has quite been finalized. Are there more changes that we can expect?
Yeah, so this really is just an interim solution. And look, it's a complex debate with it. There's white papers and discussions and consultation papers and that sort of thing. I guess at the crux of it, many investors believe that Musgrave's and Prosus are giving you two separate entry points into the same pool of underlying assets that Prosus owns. So if you agree with that view and you're also worried about maximum exposure, then you really should be thinking about the joint contribution of these stocks to your portfolio, even though they are separate legal entities. So we're hoping to just continue our consultation process over the next quarter, and we're really hoping to wrap it up as soon as we can. Nobody likes the uncertainty, but at the same time, we need to make sure we get the right move and the right answer on this.
Absolutely. So I guess in future, we must still look to the east for guidance on the trading day ahead, but not only look at Tencent, the movement in commodity prices and its impact on BHP and Anglo American, now both bigger than Naspers and Prosus, and even the demand for luxury goods of Richemont should be expected to weigh just as prominently as Tencent through Naspers and Prosus. I appreciate your time and insights this morning, Mark. Thank you for joining us.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
There is no doubt that a lot of the turbulence we are currently experiencing in the market has its roots in China. Although the threat of the Fed removing the easy money Kool-Aid from the party is not helping to calm the September shivers. One of the current tug-of-war contests between the rising demand for commodities driven by the Biden infrastructure plan and the mitigation of climate change industries, and the fall in expected demand for commodities as the outlook for global growth moderates, not least in the second largest economy in the world, has made short-term outlooks for markets even more uncertain than usual. This has resulted in a knock-on tug-of-war contest between different commodity investors. Those who believe we are experiencing a healthy pullback in a multi-year commodity supercycle, and those who are running for the exits while simultaneously trying to avoid being speared by a falling knife. I've invited Johan Erasmus of Standard Bank and One Invest to provide a more nuanced view of the commodity spectrum and to help investors who are clutching at their heaving stomachs on this violent roller coaster. Thank you for your time, Johan. I know we don't have nearly enough time to tackle this brave topic, but thank you for offering to join us. The commodity spectrum can broadly be divided into four categories: precious metals, industrials or base metals, energy, and agricultural commodities. Let's start with the one closest to the foundations of the South African economy, being precious metals, both gold and platinum group metals. What are the most important drivers for these commodities?
Morning, Narina. Gold in itself has some industrial uses, but its price is predominantly driven by external macro factors and is used as a hedge against uncertain risk events like we're currently experiencing. And people use it as an overall store of value. PGMs, on the other side, while platinum has a correlation to gold, and they are precious metals, they remain predominantly industrial metals, which means that the price is driven by supply and demand factors, which is the case for most commodities, barring gold. Mm. For PGMs, their industrial use or demand is predominantly in the automotive industry, in the manufacturing of catalytic converters for neutralizing and cleaning the harmful gases caused by internal combustion engines. In current important factor hampering the demand side for the PGMs is the global chip shortage, where from the automotive supply perspective, they cannot meet the auto demand that is currently that is currently met there. And then on the supply demand, we've seen the PGM producers all delivering a sterling set of results, meaning that they've been digging out the PGMs out of the ground at a rapid pace while the prices were high. Uh-huh. And the combination of those two is causing the PGMs price to soften massively in all three of the PGM cases.
I guess that manufacturing application of PGMs would explain also in part why it has been hit by, let's call it, the contagion of this sign of the spreading economic slowdown. Because when we look further afield toward industrial and base metals, China's steel production is now at its lowest level since the global financial crisis. Iron ore prices are down 50% since their peak earlier this year. Copper prices have moved along with the ebb and flow, and it's currently under a lot of pressure. Where do you see the outlook for these industrial metals in the near term?
Narina, overall, I see the commodity markets as taking a breather. The prices, as you've mentioned, has run very hard over the last couple of months. And then there's this overall slowdown fear that's currently putting a damper on the party. That said, that I believe the global logistics constraints will still cause suppliers to hold greater stocks, driving further production going forward. And then on a longer term, I prefer then commodities used in the electrification and for cleaner production of energy, like your battery materials and coppers and that. So overall, I think it's a bit of a short-term slowdown.
Okay, all right. Well, energy, of course, oil prices 18 months ago, negative levels at one stage we had, and oil certainly has its own supply dynamics, which means it does not follow, only follow these changes in demand. Where do you see us in the current cycle on the energy spectrum?
On the oil side, we've seen the oil price spike, and that's off the back of supply concerns. We've got Hurricane Ida in the Gulf of Mexico. There's a lot of operational issues in Mexico, Russia, Nigeria, and that is seeing the price of oil spike at this stage and run quite hard. I think on a longer term, oil is seen as a sunset industry as the world, as I mentioned a bit earlier, the world is moving to cleaner energy. But I think in the short term, oil's going nowhere. It's there. It's easy to extract. Most of our cars run on it, same with the use of PGM. So I think oil is still definitely here to stay for a while.
Okay. And then finally, agricultural produce, probably most affected by the weather and a significant driver of food inflation specifically. In a world concerned with rising inflation, or not, depending on how transitory the drivers of inflation prove to be, what is the outlook for agricultural commodity prices?
Yeah, I think the inflation is going to drive those prices still for a while. As we mentioned, there's the supply constraints. The input costs are rising massively for the farmers and that. So I think overall there's still some legs in the commodity prices. And as you rightfully said, there's weather concerns. We're having quite dispersing weathers, and it's becoming harder and harder to judge what's going to happen around the droughts and the floods. So that combined with our increasing population and that, I think, and the inflation fears, I think there's going to be some price growth there, definitely.
Yeah. Johan, thank you for reminding us that commodities really come on quite a broad spectrum, and for investors wanting to get exposure to different components of the commodity spectrum, you do have a range of exchange-traded products that provide investors with exposure to it. So certainly useful to remember that an investment in physical commodities act as a good source of diversification in a portfolio, and that the standalone risk of these sometimes violent price movements should not be viewed in isolation. Johan, as Simon would say, I appreciate the early morning. That's it for the MoneyWeb Now podcast for today. Continue the conversation on moneyweb.co.za or via the MoneyWeb app. Follow MoneyWeb News on Twitter for more information. Tomorrow morning, you can listen to Pietri Redling, host of Arena Capital. And on Thursday, it is the turn of Matete Tulare of RMB to fill the big brown boots. My thanks to Kondora Naidu, producer, Eddie Masace, sound engineer, for making me sound probably better than I would otherwise this early in the morning. And remember the words of John Lennon, everything will be okay in the end. So if it's not okay, it's not the end. Stay the course and keep the faith.
This show was brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.